You're listening to episode 25 of the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast, Resolving to be Shameless with Sarah Dean. Prosper, flourish, bloom with your people, your close-knit group, your clan, straight out of area code 419, with the most cutting-edge, controversial, and enlightening information from the most knowledgeable experts in everything, mind, body, and soul. Welcome to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. I'm your host, Rose Hollow. Happy New Year, everybody. I am over the moon today because I have the coolest podcast guest for you all, Sarah Dean. Sarah Dean is the creator and host of the Shameless Mom Academy podcast, which has been featured in 5 categories of iTunes, new and noteworthy, for over a year now, which is super hard to do, if not impossible. So I don't know what her secret is. But anyway, Sarah's biggest passion is helping women own their space. After enduring her own identity crisis following the birth of her son, Sarah took her background in psychology, health, and wellness and rebuilt her identity one step at a time. Sarah motivates and inspires women to stop shrinking and start growing. I love it. She is on a mission to inspire women and moms in particular to live bigger, bolder, braver, hashtag every damn day. And you guys, I just have to give you a little bit of backstory on her podcast and Sarah Dean and the influence she has had on my life, because I think it would be a shame if I didn't share this, because she's all the way out in Seattle. Here we are in Northwest Ohio, and she has had such a direct impact on my life. And that's really why I wanted to have her on the podcast, because I think if she has inspired me so much, she's going to inspire some of you too. But the backstory. Okay, here we go. So I had my baby in, my second baby in September of 2016. She was not a good sleeper. I also have a child with special needs. So I'm sure you can understand that my husband and I were not getting very much sleep. We were like little zombies walking around the house. Add to that, Thanksgiving, we had international guests in our home. And then Thanksgiving and Christmas, we had guests here from out of town. So during all that time, here I am taking care of my high needs children and not getting any sleep, and I'm stressed out from the holidays and trying to please everyone and meet all these different expectations that people have for the holidays, which you guys probably understand where I'm coming from here. And postpartum depression started to rear its very ugly head in our house with me. So I wasn't very pleasant to be around. So, and of course, when you're dealing with that, then your health takes a toll, and it rubs off on everybody else. So we were all pretty miserable, and I remember I was wrapping presents one day, and I thought, you know, I need to think about something else. So I turned on my little podcast app, and I'm looking, and I see this podcast called The Shameless Mom Academy, and I think, oh, if this is something that I need to hear, it is today, because I need to be a shameless mom. So I turned it on and I started listening, and I hear Sarah, and every word that came out of her mouth was like she was reading my mind. I don't know what it was, but she really resonated with me. And she was talking about, you know, trying to meet these impossible expectations during the holidays, which always seems to fall on the mom's shoulders. And also about people-pleasing, which actually became my New Year's resolution last year. So this year, my New Year's resolution is to be more shameless. And it's sort of an immeasurable goal, like stopping people-pleasing. But it's just something that I'm going to hold in my awareness as I go through this next year. I feel like I've done pretty well with my resolution for 2017 of not being a people pleaser, because I've pissed a lot of people off. And I think that is a good way of measuring if you've not been a people pleaser, especially if you always have been, because when people ask you to do things and you usually say yes, and then out of the blue you say no, They get kind of mad. So sorry, all you guys that I've said no to this year, but I'm going to keep doing it, and you're just going to have to deal with it because I got to take care of me first. and my kids and my husband, of course. But so she has really inspired me in that way, and I've continued listening to her podcast. I absolutely love everything she has to say. I feel like we could be best friends in real life. And I'm just excited to have a two-way conversation with her and record it for all of you guys to hear. Hello, Sarah Dean.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy to have you here. I just can't even describe how heartwarming it is to have you on our tiny little podcast out here in rural Northwest Ohio. So thank you. Thank you.
Oh, this will be so fun. I'm excited. I'm excited to be there with you all the way from Seattle.
Yay! The wonders of the internet.
I know.
So I want to get right into it because you are the epitome of a shameless mom. So I want to know, what is a shameless mom? And I know you also have a shameless mom manifesto. So I would love you to talk about that.
Sure. So I kind of fell into this idea of being a shameless mom. And it started when I launched my own podcast. And I launched a podcast called The Selfish Mom Academy. And very quickly was told that I was infringing on a copyright. Someone else had already, not a copyright, a trademark. And someone else had already trademarked the term selfish mom. And so I got a cease and desist letter from this woman, and it was pretty nasty. And she told me that I had like 24 hours to take my podcast down. And it was, the whole thing was completely terrifying and overwhelming because I thought for sure I was going to get sued.
Oh my
gosh.
Oh, yeah,
it was awful. I don't think this woman actually would have gone forward with suing me. I think she just wanted to scare me, which she did a really good job of doing. So I ended up trying to figure out, I was like, okay, what's another word that starts with S that I can like really embrace and work with for this idea of the podcast? And so I had this idea of wanting to talk to moms about being more selfish with their time in order to take care of themselves and in order to prioritize themselves. And so I literally like got on thesaurus.com and started looking through different words and came upon shameless and was like, oh, this is good. And like, it fits into the typography and everything that we were already using for the site. So my husband, who does all my graphic design, he could just trade it out. And then I slept on it and I woke up and I was like, actually, shameless is even better. Like I can do so much more than I could with selfish. It has a different connotation. I liked that selfish was a little provocative for people. I felt like people even gave me the feedback, like, I don't know if I really would have called, you know, you might not want to call your show The Selfish blah 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 because that might turn some people off. And I was like, oh, cool, let's do it then. So I kind of wanted to be provocative with my title, but I felt like shameless still hit that same nerve but allowed me to go in some other directions and also go a little deeper with the content. And so I got really excited about it. So that's kind of where it started. And then since then, I'm like, this is when you know, like, things happen because you needed something to be a stepping stone for you. So it was like, I needed that cease and desist letter. I needed to hire a lawyer and spend $2,000 and be super angry about it to end up with something that was way better. So
yeah,
that's how I ended up with the name, the Shameless Mom Academy. And I've really, really embraced it since then. So in light of, you know, so much political divide in the last year, especially, there's just been a lot of opportunities for me to talk to women about being shameless. I think just, you know, aside from the political stuff, there's also just the context around motherhood. There's a lot of space for women to be more shameless, and I am so happy to have a platform to talk about that. So it started off about, you know, being a lot more about motherhood and women and redefining yourself on terms that are letting you prioritize yourself for you, not for anyone else. But it's really kind of evolved in the current political climate to be able to talk about how to be more shameless in other ways as well. And so that was what led me to write my Nasty Woman Manifesto, which has become kind of my Shameless Mom Manifesto. That was a little over a year ago, right after the election, I wrote that. And that really helped me define what the show is all about, what I'm embracing in terms of how I'm building things around the show. And it was a really, really powerful experience. Like, no matter where you, you know, for me, it started out as a Nasty Woman manifesto that puts, gives people a pretty clear indication of where I stand politically. But I know that it doesn't necessarily need to be a political statement at all. And for me to put together this manifesto really allowed me to dial in what I stand for, and it created a filter through which I could make decisions. And so, you know, for example, the first few pieces of the manifesto are stand for women, stand for children, stand up to bullies, take the high road, where there's not a path, create one, when you listen, truly hear. So that's 6 of the 15 points of the manifesto. And when I have those things in mind, when I make decisions, I can make decisions around like, oh, okay, like, am I taking the high road here? Like, that's part of my manifesto. If there's not a path for me, am I going to just decide not to do something, or am I going to figure out a different way to do it? So it's really actually like kept me accountable and pushed me to like force myself to work in new ways, to really embrace these qualities that I defined as being really important to me.
How do you define being a rebel? Is it about breaking from the values of society, or is it about passionately living by your own? At Rebel Chiropractic, we believe that in a world of sick and suffering people, it is an act of rebellion to claim the health you deserve. We're the only multi-doctor practice in the Northwest Ohio region who specialize in the Gonstead method of chiropractic and in pediatric maternity and family care. So I'm talking to you, you rebel. You crunchy, anti-vaxxing, natural product using, organic, proactive, not reactive rebel. Call Rebel Chiropractic at 419-878-8142. And mention Thrive Tribe 419 to set up a complimentary nerve assessment to see with your own eyes how chiropractic can help you and your family thrive.
That's awesome. And I love how you went from being like, you were literally pushed away from what you thought you wanted to do with the Selfish Mom Academy into the Shameless Mom Academy. And I love how you talked about the connotation, or like the kind, it hits a nerve, like those words do hit a nerve. And I think a lot of moms don't want to be perceived as being selfish or shameless, but I think we as human beings, we tend to put a value or a judgment on different words or ways of being. And you know, shameless or selfish doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, right? I mean,
right.
What do you think about that?
So, yeah, I agree. I don't think it needs to be a, excuse me. I don't think it needs to be a bad thing. And I actually think that we need to really focus more on embracing shamelessness, embracing prioritizing ourselves, embracing that, like, I can do things for myself just because I deserve it, rather than like, I should do this because it'll make me a better mom, or I should do this because it'll make me a better wife. We often have been trained to do things so that we can serve others better as women. And I want to tell moms, like, you can just do things because you are a good human being and you deserve to treat yourself every now and then. So it shouldn't be like, you know, get up and work out in the morning so you have more energy to serve your family. Like, no, just get up and work out in the morning so that, like, you can be more of a badass, because you deserve to feel that way, not because you need to, you know, serve anyone else. So I think, you know, I've heard so many contextual things around, like, take time just for you so that then you have, you know, you'll be more positive and refreshed when your husband gets home from work. Like, no, don't do it for him. Do it for you. You deserve that. So I think that for me, a lot of the kind of the controversy around shamelessness is doing things just for you, because you deserve to do them. And it doesn't need to be so that it makes you better for someone else, or that it makes help you better serve. Like, that said, I am a person who's always served a lot of people in my professional life. That's always been a huge priority for me. So that doesn't mean like always be 100% selfish. It just means that when you set out to do something that's just for you, that's okay. It doesn't need to, you don't need to do things because they will ultimately benefit someone else. You can do things that will only benefit you, just because they're going to benefit you, and that's okay.
I love that. I think you really struck at the core of something that's really important for us as women moving into the future, because I feel like we're at this point in history right now, where we're having to relearn what it really means to be a woman. And excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold too, so we're both
hacking our way through the episode.
I've got my tea here. I'm trying to hang in there. But I think that, you know, going forward, this is a tough lesson that a lot of us are going to have to learn, because I feel like I've sort of been waiting for other people to give me permission to take care of myself. And it's not going to happen. You know, I have had to consciously make the decision that I come first. And yes, I come first because I want to serve my kids and my family, but I also don't want to feel miserable. You know, I also want to have a good life. I want to feel good in my body and good in my spirit. And that's a real shift. And that's not something that I was taught or modeled very well in my life at all. I mean, I don't know a lot of women who do that. So hearing this message from you and hearing that it's okay to give myself permission to do this is not only a little bit scary, but really freeing too.
Right. I think sometimes it helps to flip it and look at how the conversations that men have around the same things. And So I'm a huge fan of Erin Brown, who is an activist who talks a lot about women's rights and women in power. And she used a great example when she was speaking a year or so ago. And she said, you know, when my husband wants to go play basketball, he's like, hey, so I'm just going to go play basketball. And it's just this like super neutral statement. And she said, when women want to go do something, they're like, hey, I'm really sorry, but would you mind? Do you think it'll be okay? Like, if I make dinner first and clean the whole house and get the kids ready and do all this, then do you think maybe like if I snuck away for a half an hour, do you think you could handle it? Like, we have all these weird layers to one little thing that we want to do. And we feel like we need to prepare for it in all these different ways so that we can accommodate everyone in our life for the event. And we apologize for it and we tiptoe around it and we walk on eggshells and it's just weird. And if a guy wants to go do something very similar, like go play basketball for a couple hours, he's just like, yes, I'm going to go play basketball. Like, there's no apologizing. There's no like preparing dinner for the whole family first. There's no asking permission and justifying it with like 18 different, you know, points in presentation. So it's just, if you start to flip things and think about like, how do men do this in comparison to women? How do men handle this? What's their conversation around it? How do they contextualize things? Sometimes it makes it way more obvious how shameful we are and how weird and inappropriate it is. And so like, I try to do that a lot. And I try to like not tiptoe around my husband and not apologize for things and not ask permission. That doesn't mean I'm not respectful. And it doesn't mean that I'm not gracious or I'm not really considerate and all those kinds of things. It just means that like, I'm not going to minimize myself in front of him or in front of my child and put myself in a subservient place, because that doesn't help anyone. It makes me feel bad. It keeps me acting small in life, because if I'm minimizing myself at home, you better believe I'm going to be minimizing myself everywhere else in the world. I'm not going to be showing up at work. I'm not going to be pushing myself professionally. I'm not going to be challenging myself to take risks and serve people in big, huge, scary ways. So I think that it's really important that we look at stepping back from ways that we minimize ourselves and ways that we just have really subtle, shameful behaviors and catch ourselves in those moments, because when we can catch ourselves, we can start to rein in some of those behaviors that can really help us live more shamelessly on a bigger level and a more powerful level and make us more powerful in all areas of our life, which feels amazing and really, really cool and really helps us get a different sense of what we can actually do with our lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. And I love the thought of being more powerful and, you know, taking a little bit for ourselves. And I think that we live in a world where we see people, especially women, like, and even woman to woman, like we see another woman achieving something And we think, oh, they've done it. Now we can't do it because they've already done it, or because there's not enough to go around or something. And mm-hmm. I think that's another misconception to this. I also liked how you mentioned, in a subtle way, how perhaps being a subservient woman is not really benefiting your family, because as a mom and the changes that I'm trying to make, in part, I'm always conscious of having daughters, and I really want them to see, I want to model that for them. I want them to see me standing up for what's right. I want them to see me calling people when they're being a bully. You know, I want them to see me going out and slaying, you know, I want them to see these things, because especially with a daughter with special needs, I want her to know that she's unstoppable. You know, she is worthy and she is enough, and that we can do anything that men can do. And she's already starting to say things like, once in a while I'll hear her say, well, I wish I was a boy. And I'll say, why? And, well, because so-and-so got to do this or that, or, you know, or she'll say her favorite color is blue. And I'll say, what color cup would you want? And she'll say, well, if the pink one's not available, I'll take the blue one. And I'm like, honey, blue's your favorite color, right? You don't have to take pink. And she said, well, I'm a girl, I should pick pink. And I'm like, no. You pick whatever color you like. Girls can like any color. But I can tell that it's already sinking in at 5 years old, like, that we're limited. Like, we're only supposed to do and like and say certain things. And, I think you alluded to that a little bit in what you were saying, but.
Hey, it's Matt. Do you suffer from panic attacks? I have 3 steps to quickly stop panic in its tracks. Using 2 fingers on your favorite hand, step 1, tap 7 to 10 times on your inner eyebrow. Step 2, tap 7 to 10 times under your eye on the orbital bone. Step 3, take that favorite hand and pat your collarbone 7 to 10 times. Repeat these steps until the panic dissolves. Stop panicking, start thriving. Go to www.thrivetribe419.com and click on e-courses to schedule a one-on-one session with me today.
Son was in a preschool class for 2 years with a lot of girls. It was mostly girls. It was 9 girls and 3 boys. And the last 2 years, his preschool class has been, my son is doing 4 years of preschool, by the way.
Wow.
It basically was daycare when we started, but he was like in a 2-year-old classroom, a 3-year-old classroom, 4-year-old, now 5-year-old for pre-K, but all in the same school. So the last 2 years, it's been more of an even split between girls and boys. And as there's been more boys, so when it was mostly girls, it was interesting to see that he just put on tutus and tiaras with all the girls and was happy as a clam to do it. And I loved it. And I was like, I'm so glad he's in a class that's mostly girls. I loved the strong feminine energy in the room, that like these girls were leaders and they were powerful. And I thought it was an amazing play. My son was definitely a little more quiet and subdued. So I thought it was actually really cool that he was just going to like be in this preschool situation with strong girls leading the way. And then when more boys came into the program a little over a year ago, it was interesting to see that he pretty quickly started to make more significant relationships with the other boys, and now plays pretty exclusively with boys. And he doesn't have any issue with the tutors or anything, but like, that's not what he's going to pick. But over the summer, he was in a gymnastics class with all girls, and he wanted a leotard just like them. And I was like, you got it, let's go get one. So now he like goes to gymnastics, and he's in the all boys class now. Cause once he turned 5, they moved him over to all boys, and he's in the all boys class and he wears this leotard every single time.
Aww, so it's interesting. Awesome.
It's so funny. And it's so cool that like, I've just been really open with those kinds of boundaries to be like, you can wear whatever you want to wear. And last year at Christmas time, he went to visit Santa with like a button down shirt and tie and a crown that he made for himself and rain boots. The crown was like all pink medallions and everything. It's interesting to see what he chooses, but it's also interesting to see the more he's around boys, he is starting to get more and more boy influence, especially in terms of toys. Like, he only wants to play like Lego Ninjago and things like that. So it's interesting to see the things that, like, when all they're exposed to is one thing, they will just kind of ride it out. But when, now that he has had more freedom to choose, he's definitely starting to make more boyish choices. And that's totally fine. But it's been fun to watch how he's navigated that and kind of let him pick for himself.
That is so awesome. And I think he's very lucky to have a shameless mom like you, because I think a lot of moms struggle with allowing their kids to choose clothes that maybe aren't the typical gender type clothes, or even like choosing activities that maybe wouldn't be gender specific to their, whichever, boy or girl, you know.
I've been pretty conscientious of having him try all sorts of different things. So he's done ballet and gymnastics and soccer and swimming, and he's going to do t-ball for the first time in the spring. And then from there, he can pick what he wants to do. But I have been tried to be really conscientious of him just kind of having a wide array of gender diverse activities.
I love it. So it sounds like you guys are pretty busy. I follow your Instagram as well as your podcast. And now hearing all these activities that you do with your son, and I know that you and your husband travel, how do you take care of yourself?
So I take care of myself in a lot of different ways, very shamelessly. So I get up before my son every morning and I read and work out. And a lot of people might think like, wow, that must be really crazy and also weird and also so nice to have all that time. It's not that I have like so much extra time. It's that this is just how I choose to prioritize my time. And anyone can do what I do. It's not like a magical thing. So I get up and I read for 10 minutes. It's just 10 minutes. I don't read for an hour. I read for 10 minutes, some sort of personal development book. So right now I'm reading Martha Beck's book, Finding Your North Star, which is a really great book. Before that, I read the book Finish by John Acuff, which was also a phenomenal read.
Oh, that podcast you did with him was awesome. I loved that one.
So good. Yeah, he was a really great interview.
Yeah.
So I do my 10 minutes of reading and then I do a workout. My workouts are 20 to 30 minutes long, never more than 30 minutes. And then my son usually wakes up during my workout. And right now he's going through this phase, and oftentimes my workout will be interrupted because of that. So there's sometimes it's not, which is great, but it's often like I'll have to pause it for a minute and go, he'll want me to like help pick out his clothes, or he'll want me to help him go to the bathroom or something. He wants to help with something. And I always say yes. Like I say, yes, I'll come up and help you. So I come up, I'll go up to his room, help him pick out some clothes. Usually he'll want me to help him get dressed too. So I'll say like, I'll help you with the pants, you do the rest, or there's some sort of deal made. And then I say, okay, I'm going to go back down and finish my workout. And then he knows that it's quiet time to play. And so when he was really little, he would play in his room, or when he was in a crib, he would play in his crib. After he was out of the crib, he would play in his bed, in his toddler bed, or just play in his room until his light turned green. So he had a little a light that was set to change time at a certain time. So he would stay in his room. And I have an extremely compliant child, and I know that's not the norm. But even when he was not being compliant, I would say, okay, if you're going to be up right now, if you're going to be out of this room, then your choices are, there's like two places to choose from. Like, you can sit on the stairs and play. You can come sit on the bed in the guest bedroom where I'm doing my workout and play. Like, so he just had very limited options. And it was like, this is my workout time. I'm going to finish my workout. That's what I do. My husband gets up and goes running a few days a week during the same time. So he just kind of knows, like, part of our family routine is that we're all doing self-care in the morning. So for him, his self-care is playing Legos, and my self-care is reading and doing my workout. So I have the benefit of having just one kid who is, like I said, a pretty reasonable rule follower. Uh-huh. If you have more kids than that, you might have to get up earlier to manage
yes.
to do all that before.
I do my workout during nap time usually, or we take advantage of the pack and play, because when my kids, I like to do yoga. I do yoga every day. So my kids see me as like their personal jungle gym while I'm doing yoga.
And that's the thing. I think that you just do it when it works for you and whatever that looks like. So whether it's like an hour of yoga or 10 minutes of stretching, just do whatever feels good and whatever works, and then just do it consistently. So like the yes. best exercise, or like the right thing to do, is just going to be the thing that you can actually do that actually works consistently for you. So those are kind of my biggest two things is my morning, or my biggest one thing is my morning routine, which has those two components. But I also, like, I very shamelessly put my child in childcare way earlier than I thought I would. I totally thought I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. I had set up my local business here. I own a gym. I'd set up my gym to run pretty much by itself so that I could stay home with my child, and was completely miserable doing that. And so I had a nanny for him by the time he was 4 months old. I had him in full day daycare by the time he was 2 years old. So it just became clear to me that for me to be like the best version of myself, for me, not for anyone else, but just the best version of myself to like function as a happy person, he needed to be in childcare where he actually was making great social connections and learning way more than he was learning at home, because I didn't know what to teach him. And I was able to then be working from home, pushing myself professionally and launching new things, like launching the podcast and building my gym to new levels and all sorts of different things. So a lot of my shameless behavior is around how I've decided to kind of the life that our family has built, and how that has given me the space and grace to be like as powerful and as positive every day in what I do, and also in how I want to kind of live my life on a grander scale, both personally and professionally.
Right.
Hi, my name is Lynn Heitmeyer. My company is Immaculate Marriages and based in Defiance, Ohio. I am an ordained marriage officiant licensed by the American Marriage Ministries. Immaculate Marriages is a unique opportunity for couples of any race, gender, faith-based, or secular beliefs to unite in a beautiful, lawful ceremony. My goal is to provide a beautiful wedding ceremony designed for each couple's unique personality and desires. I will work with the couple to design the ceremony according to their needs. For the wedding ceremony of your dreams, please find me on Facebook at Immaculate Marriages or text me at 419-439-0742. Again, text me at 419-439-0742. I look forward to providing you with beautiful lifetime memories.
And you talk about habits a lot on your podcast, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit with you today, because I think when we're going into the new year, and I'm encouraging people to think about being shameless, not just women, but men too. I have a husband who is a radical feminist and very apologetic, unusual for a man. He's an apologetic male. And so this applies to men too. Being shameless, but I think it takes practice. Like in the past year with me trying to be less of a people pleaser, I have pissed off a lot of people, you know, because I have always, thanks. I have always been a people pleaser, and I always called it, I was the peacemaker, but really what it was I was a martyr. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, I didn't have enough guts to say no. And since I have started saying no, and, you know, I always think of it this way, like, is it a hell yes or a hell no? And I don't remember if that came from you or somebody else, but...
I say that all the time, but lot of people say it.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been looking at it that way too. And a lot of times it is a hell no. If it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. So I'm sorry, that's a no. And people freak out because they're not used to this person who says no. And in the past year, I cannot tell you how many people I have stood up to, I have said no to, I have set boundaries with that have just about blown their top, because who is this person? Who does she think she is? So, you know, it's been hard, but it's also been freeing. But I feel like it's a habit that I've really had to work hard to break, because not only am I not doing something, but I'm having to take action to make it happen by actually speaking up when people are not treating me well, you know? So How would you suggest people go about making this change now going into the new year and thinking about being shameless and breaking the habit of being apologetic for so many things? How do you even wrap your mind around that yet start to put it into practice?
That's such a great question. So that is where you take little tiny steps every single day. And so you can't, I mean, so for example, I mentioned earlier, like stop saying sorry and stop apologizing. That is something that you are not going to just like be like, starting January 1st, I'm not going to apologize anymore. Like right. If it doesn't work that way, you will still catch yourself apologizing all the time. I'm acutely aware of apologizing and I still catch myself apologizing unnecessarily every single day. Whether it's to my child, to my husband, to some random interaction that I have, like when I'm dropping my child off at school, a purchase at the grocery store, like there's always something where instead of saying sorry, I could say thank you for being flexible, thank you for being patient, thank you for waiting for me, thank you for helping me. All those ways that I could express gratitude instead, I still have to practice that and be mindful of it all the time. So it's just increasing mindfulness is part of it. I think that when you look at habits, you have to look at little habits that make you feel powerful every day. And then that changes your bigger scope down the road. And so I think for me, that comes from doing my reading first thing in the morning. I actually also have gone through phases of journaling in conjunction with the reading. And again, super tight timelines. And so I'll do like 8 minutes of reading followed by like 5 minutes of journaling. Because for me, I'm like, I'm not going to get up an hour earlier to do like 30 minutes of reading and 30 minutes of journaling and then a 30-minute workout. Like that's just too much. And if you can do that, great. But for the average mom who I'm usually talking to moms and I am a mom. So for people like me, that is not super reasonable. But if you can get up and if you can do a little bit of reading any time of the day, like set a timer 5 or 10 minutes, because that outside influence will impact your thoughts on a deep level if you're doing this regularly. If you can do a little bit of journaling on a regular basis. So for me, I'm going to get started. I'm doing The Artist's Way starting in January, which I'm very nervous about.
Yeah, I did that. I did The Artist's Way.
Have you done it?
Yeah, years ago.
So it's 90. I thought it was 30 days when I said yes to it. It's 90 days.
Yeah.
And it's 90 days of writing 3 pages mm-hmm. every day.
Yeah, it was a lot. I remember it being a lot.
Yeah. So I'm going to do the writing piece. I know there's some other stuff involved. I'm not sure how much of it I'm doing, but I'm committed to doing the writing just because I know for me, the writing is really powerful. And when I write every day, it really does help me again, it helps me check myself. So when I have the influence of reading and then you add on the writing piece, the exercise piece, I think is really important because every time you exercise, it allows you to feel strong, powerful, and capable, even if it's just for a few minutes. And when you prove that you are strong, powerful, and capable in one area of your life, you are way more likely to be strong, powerful, and capable in other areas of your life. So that is another really big habit. So just little tiny things that you do on a regular basis. And then practicing gratitude would be my fourth piece. Practicing gratitude is where you are just giving yourself permission to always focus on positive things and reframe things when you feel like, oh my gosh, the world is caving in. What is going wrong? And if you can immediately flip that and be like, what are 3 things I'm grateful for right now? And on the spot, be able to identify them, that is a superpower. And so for me, having those kinds of little habits where you're practicing them very routinely over time will override the habits that hold you back. So it's more of a means of crowding out habits that don't serve you rather than thinking like, I'm going to stop doing this and stop doing that and da-da-da, like, because that gets to feel like too much. And I say this even when I work with people around fitness and nutrition, I say like, you need to crowd out the bad habits. And so don't think like, I'm never going to eat sugar again. And I'm never going to have carbs and I'm never going to have alcohol. Like, don't just take out all these things that you enjoy. Instead, focus on, I'm going to add in these other things that are going to fuel me, like exercise, like water, like vegetables, like protein. And that therefore there's going to be very little room for the things that don't fuel me anymore. So if they're still there a little bit, that's okay. But over time, I'm just going to crowd them out. And that feels way more powerful than just like white knuckling through deprivation. Instead.
So. Yeah. And that doesn't last. I mean, that's not sustainable.
Right.
Willpower is way overrated. I don't know anybody who has the kind of willpower that I hear about all the time that supposedly
willpower is a very finite resource. And it's finite for a variety of reasons. But like, for example, you know, when we look at willpower with eating sugar in the evening, like the things that lead us to eat sugar in the evening are not necessarily related to whether or not we have good or bad willpower or strong or weak willpower. It's related to what are our blood sugar levels like in the evening based on the other things we've eaten. It's related to what was our stress level out through the day and how do stress hormones impact us. It's related to sleep and fatigue. So if you've been like chronically not sleeping well, or just for one night didn't sleep well, that's going to totally impact your hormones and how you're going to feel at 10 o'clock at night the next night. So when you crave ice cream at 10 o'clock at night, it could be, it also could be that you're dehydrated. So it could be, you know, these four or five other reasons that are a very much on a biochemical level or on a physiological level. And we attribute that to willpower and say like, oh, I don't have good willpower, I'm very weak, like those kinds of things. And none of that is true. Willpower is super, super finite. There's all these other reasons that are actually much more powerful that have nothing to do with you being strong or weak. And so you have to, so when you think about willpower and forcing yourself to do something, you have to look well beyond willpower, because the willpower is like kind of an insignificant piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think when you're going into the new year and you're thinking about if you make resolutions, which is another topic, but if you're making a resolution or setting a goal for yourself, I think a lot of people think that they think, I will succeed if I have the willpower to blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
So what do you think about New Year's resolutions in general? Because I know you have an interesting take on this.
So I don't do New Year's resolutions, and I don't know if I ever really have. I mean, I think that there's been a few where I've kind of like the average American done them for like 3 days maybe. But I mean, I can't remember the last time I set a New Year's resolution. I'm definitely more in line with like considering goals for the year, thinking about things that I want to do. I think the new year is a great time for like renewal, for checking in with yourself, for reassessing things, for maybe retargeting a goal. So I think there's a lot of really great analysis that can happen around that time. But I'm not one that's like, starting January 1st, I'm going to work on losing 30 pounds. Like that is not a big thing for me. I love habit implementation. Like I'm super dorky about that stuff. So something like doing the artist way and being like, okay, for 90 days, I'm going to do this. That for me is just like a habit practice. It's not necessarily a New Year's resolution. So for me, I mean, you might say, well, that's the same as a New Year's resolution. It's just a difference of semantics. But I don't generally use the first of the year as a reason to start something new. I also find that January is an extremely chaotic time. And being in the fitness industry for this long, it's been interesting that like selling fitness in January is actually a lot harder, even though everyone's like, oh my gosh, like they come out in droves because everyone's back in the gym. They are back in the gym, but it's really hectic and it's very sporadic. And so like, which is why resolutions don't last, because on January 1st, you're so excited about them. And by January 5th, you're like, oh my gosh, I already missed three of my workouts. And so that's where I think like, let January be a little bit of a transitional month and think about what do I want the next 12 months to look like? And then by February, you've started acting on some of the things, started implementing some of the things in a reasonable, at a reasonable pace where you can keep up with it. You can manage it over time. I just think that makes more sense than like, starting January 1st, I'm going to exercise, you know, Monday through Friday every week.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that, what was it, the episode you talked to John, what is his name?
John Acuff?
Acuff. Yeah. And he was talking about finishing and how the first day is the first day and the second day is the middle. Like,
totally. Yes.
That made so much sense to me, because like, I know I've done it too. Like I'm all gung ho. I sign up, I pay the money, I'm in it to win it. And then when I go and I do it, you know, I'm there for the first day and I'm like, woo. And then the second time I'm like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not even close to the finish line yet, but it's sort of like you get yourself all worked up and you don't realize that it really is. You're implementing a new habit. It's not, the middle starts on day two. You can't just put all your energy into day one, you know, you have to make it a part of your life. You have to schedule it. You have to really commit. Right, and it, right. I think it takes some consideration too, because we as moms especially are so overloaded. And in order to make room for a resolution or a goal or a new habit, we have to remove something else. Like, something's got to give. We can't just keep adding and adding and adding, because that's what literally I feel broke me in February. And, you know, I don't want that to happen to other people. Let's do it right.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So I always ask people on my podcast how they're thriving in the 419. And the 419 is our local area code here. But I'm going to ask you, how are you thriving in your life? What feeds your mind, body, or soul? What's something that you could share with us that other people might be able to try?
Sure. So I'll talk about how I'm thriving in the 206.
All right.
Will this episode go live before Christmas or after Christmas?
This is going to be my New Year's Day podcast. I always release on Monday, okay. So it's going to be New Year's Day. Yeah.
Okay. So how I'm thriving in the 206. For me, I am really conscientious of regulating my energy. So what that looks like is, I know that like I only do X amount of podcast interviews a week. I don't ever do more than two in a day. I know that I'm only going to schedule appointments on certain days. I need to always have like a few hours of blocked open time for me to get into like workflow every week. So one of the ways I really thrive is by being really on top of how I manage energy, which means I'm on top of how I manage my schedule. And when I let this get away from me, it all falls apart. Like, I get very stressed out. I get super high anxiety. I get really frustrated with myself because I know that I don't function well when I'm like back to back appointments or back to back interviews or back, like having to be quote unquote on all the time. So I need like big blocks of open time in my schedule for me to be creative. And that's what I had like this morning. I had like a 4-hour block. I was like, okay, like for that 4 hours, I am working on creating content for 3 different episodes and getting them recorded. But I can't do, like, when I'm just trying to do like 45 minutes here and 45 minutes there, like it just gets really ugly for me. And I can do that for 1 or 2 days a week, but I can't do that day to day. So schedule management and how that impacts energy management is a really big deal to me. Outside of work, we do this with our family as well. And luckily my husband and I are very similar in this way that like we both love being around people, but we also love downtime. And so we actually get like really frustrated if we have something going on like Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday. We have like 4 activities in a weekend. We're like not loving life by the end of the weekend. So we try to be careful with our time management on the weekend as a family, where we have like, okay, here is like our fun scheduled things. And then also here is where we are laying on the couch in our pajamas. And what has been hilarious is that Vinny, my 5-year-old, has now adopted this. So on Sunday, this last Sunday, I took him to do some Christmas shopping for some relatives where I wanted him to pick things out for them, which was hilarious, as he was buying people things that were like not appropriate for them. But so we get home from that, and we got home at like 2:00, I think. And he's like, I'm going to go put on my pajamas now, because my husband and I are like constantly like, oh my gosh, I need to get out of these jeans. Like, I'm going to go put on my cozy sweats or whatever, or pajamas at 3:00 in the afternoon. So Vinny goes upstairs, like he's already wearing his Target sweats. Like, he's already pretty darn comfortable. He's like, I'm going to put my pajamas on. So he's in his pajamas at 2:00 on Sunday. And I was like, oh my God, he's so our kid.
I love it.
That energy management is just critical. And I was laughing because I was like, I love that he's like, okay, like I can be on from like 8 a.m. to 2, but then like I need my pajamas. We need to like watch a movie. I need to play some Lego. Yeah. So that's a big part of it for us, is like schedule regulation for the sake of energy regulation.
Oh, yeah. That is so important. And I just have to say that, on a side note, Vinny is adorable. You have lots of pictures of Vinny on Instagram, and he's so cute.
I really enjoy those.
And my daughter are about the same age, so I can really kind of relate to some of the things that he's doing. And Yeah, it brings a smile to my face. So tell people where they can find you. I just mentioned Instagram. So that's Shameless Mom Academy.
Yes. So on Instagram and Facebook, I'm at the Shameless Mom Academy. And then if you search for me in podcasts, I'm at the Shameless Mom Academy. My website is shamelessmom.com, and the podcast is all hooked up on the website as well. So if you go to shamelessmom.com, you'll see all the episodes. You'll see, you can connect with me, reach out to me via email there. You can see different ways to connect with me and work with me there as well over at shamelessmom.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say, if anybody sends her a message or tags her, she always responds. She's always responded to me.
I do really try to reply to everything. Sometimes it takes me, especially with email, I'm like, I either reply in like 10 minutes or in like 3 days. But I do reply. Like, I try really hard to manage email, which is a whole nother level of energy management. And then with social media, I really try to reply to things and especially if someone tags me in something, I try to make sure I respond. So
yeah, it's pretty impressive how you keep up with all that. So yeah, kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. And I know that you are super busy, as everyone is, because when we're recording this, this is actually right before Christmas. So, and is this your last interview of the season then?
This is my last interview of the year. Yep.
All right. We made it to the finish line, because this is mine as well. So yay.
Nice.
Thanks for listening to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. Do you know someone who could benefit from the information you just heard? Share the love by sharing this episode. Want to connect online? Check out thrivetribe419.com to leave a review or check out more episodes. You can also join the conversation by searching for Thrive Tribe 419 on Facebook or Instagram. See you next time. Keep thriving.